Let's try this again. Oh, it worked this time. That's good. Thank you, Brother Gary. As you guys know, our missions program is always looking for different types of things to do. And so I was very happy when Pastor called and said, hey, we got an opportunity. And I said, yes, sir, that sounds great to me. So, all right, everyone. I haven't looked at my phone yet, but something tells me I ain't got a whole lot of time. It's mostly my stomach growling. It's been good to be here today, hasn't it? I'm going to ask y'all, if you will, turn to Exodus chapter 14. Go all the way to the end of it, verse 29. While you turn there, I'll tell you a funny story. Just because no matter how busy we are, we need to laugh, right? So remember a couple weeks ago, I told you guys about my fuel pump dying. I had a wonderful house call mechanic. And being the good friend that I was, I laid up under the 4Runner with him and did my best to stay out of his way. My son, who's 3 and a half and just full of life, my son, he wanted to watch too. So my son's standing around watching. Me and Sam were laid up under the car. Sam's working. I grabbed a hold of something just so my hands would be dirty. And my son, who has a million questions, said, Daddy, what are you doing down there? I said, I'm helping Mr. Sam. He said, huh, why aren't you doing anything? I said, because that's how I help Mr. Sam. Yeah. So Exodus chapter 14, verse 29. Says, but the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground, and with a wall of water on their right and on their left, that day the Lord saved Israel from the hands of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians lying dead on the shore. And when the Israelites saw the mighty hand of the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him and in Moses, his servant. I probably could have come up with a better title for this, but David needed this on Thursday night. And I always do my titles last. So you got what you got. If you come up with a better one while I'm teaching, you scribble mine out and write yours in. The title really ain't that important. It says, the title is, The Day God Woo Hit Pharaoh. Now, many of you thought David had made a typo there, but he didn't. I actually wrote that. So I know that not many of you in this room probably know what a woo hit is. Back when I played football, we all dreamt about being the guy who got to lay a woo hit on somebody. So you might ask, what is a woo hit? It's real simple. It's when one player collides with another player, and the resulting effect is that everyone in eyesight of it goes, woo! I know many of you don't understand that because we don't do nothing but throw the ball nowadays, but used to when I played, we played smash mouth football, and we hit people. And we hit people hard, and we made people's helmets fly off, and we did all kind of crazy things. And so what I want you to understand is the altercation that we have seen in this text between Pharaoh and God is a collision of two great players, and the dominant one laid a woo hit on the other. Y'all, it's September. Yesterday was the first day of college football. You got to bear with me. It was on my mind. I knew you would be earnest. Exactly. This is, if any of you have seen, go home and Google Clowney in Michigan. Google those are the only two words you need to go home and Google Clowney in Michigan and watch the video. When you see that video of that rascal's head coming off, that is a woo hit. In that particular example, the guy in the Michigan uniform is Pharaoh. Clowney is, well, I just can't say that. Just anyhow, so what we see in this text, what we see in this text right here, you know, I gave you the tail end of it, but there's a whole story out in front of us. And what I'm afraid, you know, everyone says, oh, he's talking about when we crossed the Red Sea. Okay, well, you know, we've all seen that like 100 times, right? I mean, we've all seen where Charlton Heston, I mean, Moses, walked up to the edge of the Red Sea, put the stick out there. They walk across. 4.5 minutes later, you got the nation of Israel from one side to the other, right? And I'm afraid that in our minds, we've heard this story so many times. That's all that the nation of Israel crossed the Red Sea means to any of us. We've relegated this to a 4.5 minute cinematic experience where we say, oh, well, that was neat. It's almost like a fairy tale, right? It's almost like, oh, well, that must be symbolic of something. Or it's almost like this is, oh, yes, that's old hat. You know, so what? God walked the nation of Israel across the Red Sea. I was in a class a few months ago, and a man, I love this. I never thought I'd get a chance to say this, but the last thing this man said to me, because he actually died like a week and a half later, was this statement. Have you ever considered that for the nation of Israel to cross the Red Sea would have to have been dry for a minimum, depending on which assumptions you use, would have to have been dry for a minimum of 6 hours, but by some calculations, as long as 22 hours. He said that, and I went, huh, I never thought about it like that. I mean, doesn't that kind of put the miracle in a little bit different scale? It's a little bit different perspective, right? I mean, most of us, we walk in and we go, okay, yeah, that's great. He walked the nation of Israel. No, 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 people. He walked 2.1 million people across what could have been a 7-mile stretch. He dried up a part of the sea for a minimum of 6 hours. My calculations ended at 10. Let that sink in. So what I want to do today, and I'm going to do this real fast, so y'all listen real close. We're going to walk through the math. I'm an analyst by trade. I know that bums a lot of you out. But we're going to walk through the math of how big this miracle was. That's where we're going to go first. So the first point of today's sermon, first thing that we're going to learn today is that God's power is not bound by nature. So many times we want to put God in a box and think that he has to operate inside the laws of nature. But he doesn't. You see, he's the creator. And so he has the authority and the ability to, at his will, temporarily or permanently suspend any law of nature he wants to. So I know you've seen this a lot of times. Consider the scale of marching approximately 2 million people across the Red Sea. It wasn't 15 minutes. It was all night long. As a matter of fact, in verse 21 of chapter 14, it tells us, Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and all that night the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind and turned it into dry land. The waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and on their left. I'll be honest with you. I heard that man tell me how long it was, and I immediately began to figure, I got to prove this mathematically. And I said, you know, I only wish the Bible told me how long it was. And it wasn't until I proved it mathematically and then got back to the scripture that I said, well, gee, that was a waste of time because it says that he did it all night long. And I'm like, oh, okay. But it still feels good to have mathematically proven it. So today, y'all, I'm just telling you, we need a bigger pulpit. I ain't got enough room for all my stuff. So today we're going to try another piece of technology because, you know, I just do so well with technology. Especially when it's not even mine. I thought it might be helpful if we saw this on a map. If we understood what we were talking about, where we were talking about from. Now to move my notes. So when we talk about the Red Sea, we're going to have to make a couple of assumptions here. When we talk about the scale of this miracle. The first assumption we're going to have to make is the location of the Red Sea crossing. So I know when I first started looking at this, I was looking at the whole Red Sea. And not that I have studied long enough to develop a really robust opinion. But one thing I have learned is that a lot of people have a lot of opinions about where exactly they cross, but they basically boil down into three areas. One that most people seem to agree on is that they cross in the Gulf of the Suez. Now, give me a little bit closer, guys. And zoom in on the map just a little bit. All right, so this is the Gulf of the Suez. So I'm going to use a conservative estimate because I want to be conservative. But I believe that most people agree that this is where they crossed. That'd be the place where they crossed. You guys see that? Maybe, maybe not. You got it. Okay. It wasn't on my TV, or my eyes aren't good enough. So anyways. So this is one place where they believe that people cross. Let's go back to the one before that. There we go. Another place that people believe that they may have crossed is down here in the Straits of Tehran. You may pronounce that differently, but that's how I pronounce it. A lot of research I've read, there's some pretty good credibility to that, but this is a newer line of thinking, so I'd be careful how far you take that. It's a really neat idea that they crossed right there. But again, just I tell you all this merely for context. At the end of the day, it really doesn't matter that much because it's all considered the Red Sea and they got across it and the Bible tells us that it was all night long. I just want you to be a little educated about it. So don't get hung up in these details. All right, so let's assume, zoom in closer, guys. Thank you. Thank you. Next picture. Technology whipping me again. Oh, not that close. Okay. That'll do. That'll do, guys. All right. So let's assume, just so we can do some math and get to lunch, that that's where they crossed. Okay? Because, again, my stomach's growling. I'm hungry. So can we all agree that they crossed there today? Can we agree to that? Okay. All right. Do your own research. Get your own opinion. It doesn't really matter. So the distance there is 6.58 miles from shore to shore. Okay, so I'm going to put that in perspective. Any of y'all been to Ebenezer Landing? Yeah. Out on Lake Wiley. Okay, when you stand at Ebenezer Landing and you look across the water, past Goat Island, look on across the water, it's 2,300 feet, about half a mile. Okay, I take you down here to Riverwalk, down here, you know where the bridge goes across Catawba. That's about 525 feet. 6.58 miles a distance. 6.5, okay. All right, so you get that it was a long ways to be dry, okay. So then the next assumption we have to make is how many Israelites were there? All the Bible tells us is that there were 600,000 men plus women and children. So we're going to make some assumptions. So let's assume 2.5 women and children for every man. That gives us 1.5 million women and children on top of the 600,000 men. That gets us to 2.1 million. I feel comfortable with that assumption because it also said that there were some stragglers that went with them out of Egypt, right? So you put a few extra ones on the end there, and now you got 2.1 million people. Some people have estimated the number to be closer to 4 million, but again, hey, let's just be conservative, right? So 2.1 million people. Then we have to ask the question, what did they look like when they were marching? When they came out of Egypt, what did they look like? So if you have 2.1 million people, that's a big mob. You don't walk out of Egypt in a big mob. In fact, J. Vernon McGee says that the word that was used to describe how they walked out of Egypt, that word, is synonymous with having walked out in military formation, which would have been consistent with five people wide. Now, I didn't do the math on five people wide because I don't really believe that when they got to the Red Sea, they were only five people wide. I'm going to do the math on 50 people wide. Y'all think we can go with that, 50 people? So 50 people across in military formation, how many rows? 42,000. Okay, 42,000 rows deep. Okay? Now, y'all going to have to trust me. I'm an analyst. I do math all day long. We don't have time to get into it. But if you consider 42,000 rows, let's say an assumption of, you know, 3 feet per row of consumed space, you're talking about a line of Israelites 126,000 feet long, 23.86 miles. Okay? So let's say you got roughly 24 miles of people. That kind of changes how you read everything in the Old Testament, doesn't it? I mean, that alone just kind of gives you scale on the size of the nation of Israel wandering around the desert, right? I love math. Okay, so you got 24 miles of people, 50 people wide. Let's just say that's probably as wide as this room. Marching across the desert. And then they get somewhere that's 6.5 miles wide of water that they got to get across. And let's not even talk about how deep it was. Because over there, if you believe that they crossed on the Straits of Tehran, I believe the depth in the area where they crossed was somewhere around 800 meters deep. Yeah, meters, not feet, meters. Okay. Anybody getting an idea about how big God is yet? Okay, it's starting to be a little bit better than what Charlton Heston led us to believe, right? Okay, this is pretty wild and crazy that our God, the one that we was praying to this morning, the one that we were talking to, walked 126,000 feet worth of people across 6.5 miles. I mean, it's nuts, right? So if we take all of those assumptions and we roll them into a simple equation, Red Sea crossing, so that's the distance of the Red Sea where they cross, plus the length of the column of the people, and we divide it by an average of 3 miles per hour. Can we agree that they probably didn't walk any faster than 3 miles per hour, right? Okay. We get that they would have had, it would have taken 10.15 hours from the time the first person stepped in to the time the last person stepped out. All night long. Let that sink in, people. My prayer this morning, as I was praying about it, I said, God, and I said, I know that like none of us were there. If you were there, I don't want to hear about it. But none, as far as I can tell, none of us were there. So it's kind of hard for us sometimes to grasp the same experience they had. But through the power of the Holy Spirit, I'm asking God to open up our minds and help us to understand what it must have been like to walk across the Red Sea that was dry for 10 hours. 10 hours. I mean, think about that. So when we talk about God not being bound by nature, there's another point I want to bring up about that, and that is that God uses natural forces to accomplish his will. But he did it in an unnatural way. See, he used the wind, which is naturally occurring. He used the wind. Let me do this right quick. We're done with the map, guys, I think. Something like that. He used the wind to drive the water back and make two walls. Again, just talking about how God uses nature. You know, there are some people that have come up with these really, really neat scientific ways of thinking about how this could have actually have happened. If you believe that they crossed at the Straits of Tehran, when you think about an east wind blowing across those straits, there's two things I want to point out to you. One, in the Straits of Tehran, there is a land bridge about 205 meters below the surface. That means that there's, you know, you go down 205 feet and there's 205 meters, and there's 600 meters on this side and 600 meters on that side. But right down the middle, there's a little land bridge. And if an east wind blew strong enough across the Straits of Tehran, it would be kind of like when that hurricane came up the west coast of Florida a year or so ago and sucked all the water out of Tampa Bay. Y'all remember that? If you've never heard about this, I got a friend that grew up on Mobile Bay. And he said he remembers a boy, when the hurricanes would come up in certain places, it'd suck all the water out of Mobile Bay during the first half of the hurricane. And he can remember going out and riding his bicycle around in Mobile Bay. And then when it started blowing again, he had to get out real fast because all that water that just got sucked out was about to get pushed right back in. That effect is what would have happened if that's where they crossed. So, and what that effect would have actually been would have been the water piled up on both sides of this land bridge, a beautiful little place right across. Some people, I just heard this one yesterday, but I'm glad I heard it because it goes right along with everything I was saying. Some people believe there was some kind of volcano thing that caused a tsunami and pushed all the water out of the Gulf of Suez where they crossed. I'm like, well, you know, that's really neat if that happened, because think of that a volcano erupted at just the right time to suck all the water out right when the nation of Israel got there. And 10 hours later, to throw it all back in there and drown the Egyptians. You know what? If that's really what you want to believe, I can go with you. But you got to give me credit on God's timing, right? God uses natural things in supernatural ways. I'm cool with believing that God uses natural things, just as long as you give me credit that he uses them in supernatural ways. See, he could have split the Red Sea any way he wanted to. You understand that this is God. He could have, there could have been two hands that came down out of the sky and went. But he didn't. He blew an east wind. He chose to use something natural. And then underneath that, I want you to notice. that then he used the sea itself to demolish the Egyptian army. See, he could have slain them. He could have spoken to them. He could have done anything he wanted to kill them. But again, he used natural means in supernatural ways to accomplish his will. This proves that God is not bound by the laws of nature. So what I want you to process in this, the reason why I bring this out, this is a great story, but it's useless if it's just a story. This has implications on our life today, right? So when you come up against a Red Sea in your life, a lot of us, we immediately look to the natural for the solution, and we believe that only the natural is the way it will occur. We never give room for God to use the natural in a supernatural way to accomplish his will. But we got evidence of it right here. So if you believe the Bible, you got to believe the whole thing. You can't believe parts of it. I mean, that just ain't smart. If you believe the Bible, you got to believe that this happened. Man, I got to hurry. All right, so point two, God's power is purposeful. Easy for y'all to hear. Purposeful. One thing I want us to remember, and this is one thing that I think we all should guard ourselves against is this idea that God is an act at a dog and pony show. God is no act in a dog and pony show. Throughout the ministry of Jesus, we see miracles always served one purpose, and the purpose was to glorify the Father. It's to reveal who Jesus was, to reveal the plan. And it's no different. The purpose of these miracles, the purpose of this miracle was definitively to show the hand of God. Now, we can't ignore the fact that as humans, we get to be beneficiaries of these miracles from time to time, right? But make no mistake, they're not just acts to wow people. They are to reveal something about God. Twice in chapter 14, in verse 4 and in verses 17 through 18, God explains that he will use Pharaoh's army to get glory for himself. And I love this. If you got any like a deep sea fishermen in here? Yeah, I'm not either because I get seasick. I've tried twice. I ain't going a third time. I want to be a deep sea fisherman. I love the idea of it, but my stomach and my head just disagree. I see God reeling that big old trophy fish in. I mean, like when you go back and look at how he played Pharaoh. I know that sounds like our God played Pharaoh. Y'all gotta understand who Pharaoh was at this point in time in the world's evolution. Pharaoh was like president of the United States. He commanded the most powerful army on earth. Pharaoh was as a god to his own people. Like this was not some little, I better be careful which of the world powers I pick on. I don't want to be offensive. This wasn't a nobody. This wasn't, you know, some sleeping giant. No, this was America, guys. I mean, this was the America of the day. And God played him like a little puppy. Man, I gotta share this. I get excited about this whenever I start seeing what he did. I'll make sure I get you in the right place. So in verses 3 and 4 of chapter 14, Pharaoh will think, this is after, so in verses 1 and 2, and I'm just not reading verses 1 and 2 because they got a bunch of places I can't pronounce real good and we're in a hurry. But basically, the nation of Israel, they done marched down this way. You know, they following where God told them to go. And then God says, all right, turn around and go back. Huh? Yeah, I know you was already here and you went there, but now I want you to turn around and go back to there. All right. So they turn around, they go back to that place. And then this is what God says about it. He says, Pharaoh will think, this is what Pharaoh's thoughts will be. The Israelites are wandering around the land in confusion, hemmed in by the desert. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart and he will pursue them. But I will gain glory for myself through Pharaoh and all his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. So the Israelites did this. So think about it. Pharaoh, you know, he's hanging out, and he's like, oh my goodness, my son's dead. We've been through all these plagues, and now all my labor is gone. You understand that, right? The Israelites, they were the slave labor for the Egyptians. And like, we don't have time for this, but like, just trust me. They walked out of Egypt with the wealth of Egypt too. Some of y'all been around, y'all read that part of the story, right? On their way out, they say, hey, can we have some gold and silver? Say, yeah, get out of here. Go, go, go. Yeah. So now Pharaoh's got buyer's remorse, right? He's like, what have I done? And then he gets to report, hey, you know, those slaves you let walk out of here, they're wandering around in the desert. Pharaoh's like, aha, I go get them back. All the while, God's like, I'm going to get them all. We used to do this in football. Yeah, September, you got to deal with me. We used to do this in football on the offensive line. We'd take a guy and call him a pulling guard. That was what his job was. And he would start here, and instead of coming right at you when the ball snapped, he would take one step back, and he would go running down this way behind everybody, and then he'd come around and hit somebody out there. And sometimes, if you really want to mess somebody up, you pull both of them, send them different directions. Anyways, so what happens is a guy on the defensive side of the ball, because that's the people trying to tackle the guy with the ball, okay? So one of them guys goes running through that hole. And I love it. Coach used to tell people, if you go running through a hole and nobody's there, look out. Because, at this level, there's not just nobody there. There's somebody coming for you. This is kind of like that. God's like, I got an idea. We'll sucker him into this. And then when he ain't expecting it, this is going to be good, right? I'm sorry, I just get really excited when I see what God was doing here. He was reeling him in. He gave him some line and pulled him in. Got ahead of myself a little bit. Y'all bear with me. So God's power is purposeful. When we see his miracles, when we see him doing stuff, we don't need to get hung up in the love of the experience. You know, it would have been really nice for the nation of Israel to just go, wow, that was really cool. No, there was something happening here. You know, when God starts to move, when God starts to make things happen, if we're mature, we'll stop and go, what's he up to? What's he doing? He's revealing himself. So a lot of times, you know, we've been talking about revival in this church, right? We've been talking about, you know, something's coming. We need to be paying attention on the front end, because you're a bad Pentecostal if you ever say something like this. You know, there's something about revival I just don't like. But I'll say it. We get to feeling so good that we forget the purpose. We get to enjoying it so much that we forget the purpose. That we forget that there's lost people that need to be restored. And we forget that there's broken marriages that need to be put back together. And we forget that there's alcoholics that need to be delivered. And we forget that there's drug addicts that need to be fixed. We forget all those things. We just enjoy the Spirit. But remember, when God starts putting his miracles out there, they're for a purpose. It's to reveal himself to mankind. Whew. All right. Point three. God's power demands our reverence. In verse 31, it says, and the Israelites saw the mighty hand of the Lord displayed against the Egyptians. The people feared the Lord and put their trust in him and in Moses, his servant. So remember, we started off today talking about a woo hit, right? Y'all remember that? When the nation of Israel, 10 hours later, came out of the Red Sea and they saw the water piled back over the Egyptians. See, one of the verses I didn't read was when Moses tells the nation of Israel. The nation of Israel, they get all, Kelly don't like the nation of Israel. She thinks the Israelites are the whinest bunch of people in the world. And she really gets mad at me when I say they're just like us. But anyways, the nation of Israel had just walked out of Egypt with all the wealth, all the gold, all the silver of Egypt. And they get to the Red Sea. And they look at Moses, and instead of saying, how are we going to do this, they just immediately go, were there not enough graves in Egypt? Like, come on, people. You just walked out of Egypt without lifting a sword. What are you talking about? Something's happening, you know? No, it's like gloom and doom and despair, right? I love it. Love it. They make it through the Red Sea. I told you that. Then Moses tells them, said, no, y'all just be still. See today that the Lord's going to fight for you. the Lord's going to win. And the Egyptians, I love this, the Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. So 10 hours of the strong east wind and the sea being dry and them walking across. 10 hours later, the last rascal sets up on the seashore and Moses goes, and they see the bodies of the Egyptians on the shore. Woo. I mean, that's light. I mean, that's it. There is no more question. If Pharaoh was perceived to be the most powerful man on earth, and God just drowned his army. A nation of slaves walked out of Egypt with all their money and didn't raise a single weapon, didn't hit a single person, didn't kick anybody, didn't hack their servers and hold them hostage or any kind of cyber crime or nothing like that. They literally just walked out with the wealth of Egypt. That's a pretty resounding woo. The nation of Israel had an experience that I think we all at some point in our life have had when we become face to face with the power of God. See, the last thing I wrote in your outline, yeah, it doesn't hurt my feelings when I wrote it, so I hope it didn't hurt yours too bad, but it hurt mine a little bit. At the point of salvation, reverence is easier. But how about weeks or years later? And this is really, because I'm running out of time, I'm out of time. Let me just get right down to it, the 5-minute sermon version of it. God did something really big. And when he did something really big, there was no denying who he was. And when you understand who he is, you'll be reverent of him. And we talk about revival and we talk about all these great things we want, but we have no reverence of God. We approach God with way too casual of an attitude. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not advocating that, you know, we gotta suit up to come to church and that we've got to do all these behaviors. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about in your heart. When you pray, do you understand that you're praying to the God who, if he had a printed resume, could actually put on his resume, hey, I split the Red Sea. I mean, I get excited when I can put on mine that, you know, I know Excel. He split the Red Sea. He dried a path. I don't care if he didn't dry, but a 10-foot wide path. That rascal dried a 10-foot wide path across the Red Sea for 10 hours. When you recognize his power, you won't be able to help yourself but be reverent of it. Now, I think that time and distance from an event causes us to lose our reverence. We can flop on over to chapter 16, and we see the nation of Israel, they done got hungry. And immediately, we were sitting around pots of meat in Egypt. You were slaves. God said, that's fine. I'll rain down manna from heaven. It'll be okay. No big deal. I'm like, come on. This is the God we serve. So how does all this apply to us today? What does this mean for us today in the church? One, we've got 66 books of case studies like this that ought to be enough. If I took you down to the Catawba River and he split it and you walked across on dry land, you would lose your mind. And that water usually ain't nothing but about knee deep most of the way across there. You wouldn't know what to do with yourself. 6.5 miles. Roughly 30 miles to traverse when you add all the people. 10 hours. It's a big deal. He's a big God. If we want him, if we want to see, if we want to be a part, if we want revival, if we want these things in our lives, one thing you're going to have to understand is a concept called reverence. There's a idea that because he's the God who cares about your 5-year-old's teddy bear's boo-boo, and he is, he cares. I mean, don't get me wrong. He cares about little things. He knows the number of the hairs on your head. Some of you made it easier for him. But we think that because he's that God, we think he's not the God who, if he desired, good, you'd be done. You know, one place in Scripture it says that we're like a blade of grass. Here today, cut down tomorrow. We forget how much we need him. We forget how powerful he is. So I believe his word to us today is to acknowledge his power. The same power that can split the Red Sea, the same power that fed thousands, the same power that's done all the miracles we read about, it demands. It doesn't request. It demands that we reverence him. Guys are going to help me do communion. If you guys will come on down. Worship team, you guys come on. I'm sorry that I had to go through that so fast. But I challenge you to go back and read chapters 12, 13, 14, 15, and even 16 of Exodus. Because I believe that you're going to see some crazy, incredible things in there. I told Kelly, I said, I'd love to preach one day what I would call the lessons from the Red Sea, because just in those chapters alone, there's so much we can learn about our walk. But today, I want you to leave here with this idea. When we see the scale of his power, when we know who this God is that we serve, we will give him reverence.